Welcome back to another episode of the Talks of Life podcast. In this week's episode, I had a great conversation with Caroline Shamanix. She is the CEO and Fleet Farming Program Manager at Ideas for Us. Caroline is a passionate horticulturalist in the Central Florida community, where she earned her degree in landscape and horticulture technology and her bachelor's degree in environmental studies and sustainable urbanism. In this episode, we explore the concept of fleet farming and share inspiration for urban gardening. Fleet farming is a pedal-powered urban agriculture program that transforms lawns into farms. This is accomplished by converting underutilized lawn space into productive, localized edible gardens or microfarms. This program works to provide edible landscaping to schools, community centers, affordable housing units, businesses, and individuals through a community farming initiative and edible landscape garden installation services. Their mission is to empower all generations to grow food to increase local food accessibility. I learned a lot in this episode with Caroline, and I hope you do too. As always, don't forget to subscribe and leave a review so others can find this podcast. Thank you again for just being here and taking this time. If you want to just go ahead and introduce yourself and your involvement with Ideas for Us in the fleet farming, I'd be happy to begin with that.
Awesome. So my name is Caroline Shamanix. I am the Chief Operations Officer of Ideas for Us and the Fleet Farming Program Manager. I've been with Ideas for Us since 2015 as a volunteer, and then I was hired to basically help to run the fleet farming program. And from there, I, you know, taught myself a lot of different skills like accounting and grant writing, project management, event planning, internship management, and then I eventually led into staff management and larger project management. And from, you know, the time that I started till now, it's truly incredible because every day I feel like I get to make a difference and lead an environmental project and join forces with different nonprofits and leaders in the community to do things that actually matter. And the whole idea with Ideas for Us, basically we lead environmental education through the Ideas Hive, which is a monthly think and do tank that involves community members and subject matter experts to talk about relevant, real conversations of environmental challenges and sustainability in their area. And then at the end of the month, we engage in an eco action project throughout our branches. We have branches in Africa, Asia, Europe, and three here in Florida. And so through all of that, we're not only, you know, advocating for the things that we care about or learning about them for our own education, but we're doing something directly about that. And that's what I love about Ideas for Us. We're very action oriented. Typically we well go over the one action project per month, and we really try to do things every week, at least here in Orlando where we're headquarters. So, you know, Ideas grew from this small club at UCF where they were doing action projects on campus, doing fun things like a party called Do It in the Dark, where they have a party that's only energized by solar energy and other means that don't require energy, which is fun, to waste cleanups, to, you know, public demonstrations of waste in the form of art. They've just done so much to kind of get it started. And from there, we've just been able to expand and get, you know, more professional and more impactful, more collaborative in every project that we're trying to do after.
Very cool. So the projects, I mean, they vary and they look different each month, I'm sure, right? Depending on what the goal or target would be.
So the main idea of Ideas for Us is that we have five focus areas: energy, water, food, waste, and ecology. This allows us to have kind of like a sampling of sustainability. So people can come and learn about things that they may not know about or things that they love and have a variety of different ways to learn and to get involved. And it kind of acts as our big areas that we like to associate each project or education event with. And those are kind of like the five big ones. And of course, I'm partial to the food aspect of that, as, you know, fleet farming, growing food, and cultivating plants is something that is one of my biggest passions.
So did you grow up in Florida yourself, or?
I'm a Florida girl, born and raised. I've seen snow like maybe like twice in my life. But I absolutely love Florida. I think it's a gorgeous watercolor of, you know, different types of habitats. And we're very unique on the planet. You know, the latitude of where Florida sits, it makes it really special because we're the only peninsula that is at that that latitude. And so with the different areas of elevation that we have a variety of different habitats and plants and animals. And it's so precious, as well as being on top of, you know, this ancient underwater river, which is our aquifer. Mm-hmm. Like, what is more amazing than our Florida springs and our water bodies and how, you know, aquatious we are as a landscape, I think is fascinating. So for me, there's a sense of responsibility, right? Knowing that my passion is for the environment and I like to bring people together and that I like to be collaborative with people, I feel a responsibility to be able to protect what I love so much about the beautiful state of Florida.
Sure. Was that something you grew up kind of having an attachment to or understanding even? Or was it something you learned, you know, through college?
Yeah. So, my family and I, you know, we go camping every year. And I grew up in a small town called Gotha that's in West Orlando. And in Gotha, we had this beautiful forest that one day was completely every single tree decimated. Mm-hmm. And I grew to learn that it was a very historic genome of trees. I kind of got into the whole environmental world when I was riding my bike with my best friend, Gotha. And I had the feeling that my life was going to change that day, and it totally did. We ended up riding our bikes into this forest, the forest that we had left in our community. And we, you know, in a sense, were trespassing, but it turned out to be great because it was a botanical garden, a 6-acre botanical garden called Nearly Gardens. And there is a caretaker in the front yard that ended up giving us a tour, and he knew every single plant in that botanical garden. And he told us that at the end of the month, he was moving out and they were looking for someone to replace him to be able to live in this beautiful 1880s historic home of the famous scientist, Dr. Henry Nearly, to be able to take care of the property in exchange for, you know, living there. And my brother and I convinced them that we were the best people for the job, not having much experience. And it was an amazing 4 years living in a botanical garden, learning about every plant. I started going to horticulture school with my brother. And from there, you know, I got an internship on a farm close by that I would ride my bike to. And from there, I got a job with Fleet Farming. And it just, you know, it went on and on and on. And it was kind of like some sort of divine intervention that I found this place and I found my love in plants. And, you know, I found my passion for just being an environmentalist at large.
That's so incredible. So have you gone as far as to like become a master naturalist or?
So I do have a bachelor's in environmental studies and sustainable urbanism. Mm-hmm. Maybe I'll get go to grad school one day, but really I just want to get in there and get involved. And luckily that's what I'm able to do. Yeah, luckily that's what I'm able to do with Fleet Farming and Ideas. I've always had the idea that if it's your passion, don't wait, right? Don't wait till school's over. Don't wait until you have that certification or you do that class. Just get into it, you know, with the local nonprofit, being a volunteer, building up that resume, and, you know, creating impact over a lifetime. So that's kind of my goal I'm trying to do here.
I love it. I think you're totally achieving it and inspiring people along the way. Because that's, you know, it's a very, you know, everybody has the same message of like, just find what you love, right? But it's not that easy. It's just kind of being, you know, willing to stay open to the opportunity, you know, still kind of finding what you don't like to find more of what you do like. And it does take time, you know, and to have patience. But some people, it does seem like it's like this divine like moment where, like, yeah, gut feeling, intuitive, like knowing that, oh yeah, today's the day, like this is where I'm supposed to go. Like this is my next path. And that is just so amazing to hear that story about how, I mean, even to grow the relationship with your brother, right? It's quite the bonding experience for your family to continue to learn about, all the Florida fauna and whatnot.
It's amazing. And I think too that like, I feel like sometimes we feel like we're not ready or we don't have enough confidence or that people, you know, there's not enough opportunity, But with Fleet Farming, as an example, I reached out to them and I made a pitch and I was like, I am the girl for you guys. And, you know, now it's years and years later and I'm still in love with it and still working for them. So just putting your foot out sometimes is how to get the ball rolling.
For sure. So can you share a little bit more about Fleet Farming? Is it a newer concept, a term? What's the history behind that?
Yeah, so Fleet Farming was created in 2014. The inspiration was Curtis Stone, the urban farmer. He has an awesome book, awesome YouTube. Just him as a person is fascinating. And he really created a science that, you know, from the people that inspired him. But basically the idea that we have so much land that is underutilized in America, you know, more than 40 million acres of lawn are not being utilized. Sometimes, you know, certain reports like a EPA report suggested that 30 to 60% of the city's fresh water goes to watering lawns. And then the whole concept of mowing them, you know, fertilizing them, which can lead to overgrowth of algae in our waterways from high levels of nitrogen and phosphorus, as well as even having the only association with nature for some people being going outside and spraying chemicals to kill, you know, like having that association. Rachel Carson, she shared it as biocides, and having that relationship with nature where, you know, that's all you really have is something that we want to move away from. We want to be able to say that these areas of land are vital to our community's food systems. This is how we can have local food systems when we don't have agriculturally zoned lands or we don't have massive farms anymore. We're becoming more and more urbanized. So why not take this as an opportunity to invite our community outside together in a positive way, including all generations of people seeking connection, seeking nutrition, seeking community, and really transform this. So Fleet Farming in 2014 was created out of the Ideas Hive. So what I shared earlier, that community meeting, that's really where Fleet Farming began. Basically the idea was, we don't have farmland. How do we have a local food system? At the time, a lot of the farmers markets had what we call Costco growers, where they would, you know, load up all their produce at Costco, you know, those big Sam's Club, big box stores, and go to farmers markets and resell to people who were wanting to do the right thing of supporting local farmers, but they didn't really understand that on that avocado saying that it's from Guatemala, that's not part of a local food system. You know, that is a form of a resale model. And so Fleet Farming was born with Chris Castro, Heather Grove, John Reif, Michelle Bombayer, other people who really began this from the beginning. They worked with homeowners who wanted to donate their lawns to this program. Typically people that just didn't want to mow it. They didn't want to take care of it. They wanted to give it to the community. And then from there, we had a select few crops that we were educated in growing. We would bike to the local Audubon Park Farmers Market that's less than a mile away from our farms, which is hyper, hyper, hyper local. So fun. Probably some of the most fun days of my life were, you know, farming all day, working the market, biking with that heavy trailer all the way back to Chris Castro's house at the time. And then feeling so exhausted, but so utterly happy that we were just like dancing in the farm, in the front yard, because I couldn't believe what my life was,
right,
that I got to grow food and feel so connected to a community at the same time. And so basically from there, our model grew. We got an internship program. We started doing an edible landscaping service. We started doing fleet education where we could do classes, one-on-one trainings, workshops. And we continued to do our community events like the Swarm Ride. The Swarm Ride allows for people to come out on their bicycles with us, learn how to farm and go from house to house. Utterly amazing way to, you know, get connected and stay healthy. So all of that together allowed Fleet Farming to grow from something that a small group of people did in their spare time or on the weekends or minimally into something that is a career. And now we have, you know, a large staff and we're able to expand. We have a CSA program, which is a weekly basket of produce. our edible landscaping service has been able to install over 18 school gardens, as well as community gardens, gardens for veterans, fruit orchards for other community members in need, like women's shelters. So it's just been amazing. And there's so much more that we can do from this point.
So has the COVID impacted it negatively, positively? Have you seen any more people wanting to grow their own food?
Totally. So it has impacted it negatively in the fact that we had to stop our community events. We had to furlough our staff, last year, 2020. And it really affected us because we had to be very careful of, not spreading COVID and still being a part of our community and still offering, plant pickups and produce pickups and things like that. And as well as it really made it serious growing food. It's not just something cute that people in high income neighborhoods can be involved with. It's something that is related to everyone. And I think now that a lot of jobs, even after, all this has happened for a year, I think people are more so working at home and they've transitioned to spending more time at home. And I think that with that, people have more time to care for a garden and to enjoy that and to be able to grow their own food, native plants, pollinators, like whatever, fruit trees. So we've definitely seen a lot more people become interested in our edible landscapes, but also more interest in our weekly baskets of produce, just because having your own system of nutrition to build your immunity is super important to your health and the health of your community. So yeah, all of that together, it's been a game changer, actually, having COVID affect our communities. Mm-hmm. So you have to kind of, make lemonade out of your locally sourced lemons.
For sure. So even now, are community events starting to pop up again or in smaller
portions? Totally, yes. Yeah, so we're starting to do community events again. We're starting to do like workshops, and we're still doing like tree plantings, community garden builds. All of that is still happening. We're going to start back up our swarm rides pretty soon, which we're excited about. And, as long as the community feels safe to come out and to get involved, we want to be there and we want to be back with everybody again. So
that's awesome. So I understand it's kind of like there's different chapters. Is that how the Fleet Farming works, or regions of?
So Fleet Farming is only in Orlando, Florida.
Okay.
We have some community growing locations that we help out in the West Orlando community, but most of our farms are in Audubon Park. We basically tried to turn Audubon Park into an agri-hood where we are using a lot of the same, the neighbors' front and backyards, and focusing on that because we are mostly run by bicycles. Hmm. But since we've had so many people reach out to us to be part of that program, and the response is, well, we can't bike that far. I'm sorry.
I was going to say, there's a cutoff, right, of radius.
Yeah. I'm like, I can't possibly bike that far. I'm talking like other countries. We had thousands and thousands of people asking us to come to their area. So we started Edible Landscapes so we could at least serve the Central Florida community. So within 1 or 2 days, we could build a beautiful garden full of raised beds, fruit trees. We can set up a drip irrigation system on a timer so it makes it easy and less wasteful of water. And we can also do things like create more perennial agricultural systems, so edible shrubs and ground covers and fruit trees all planted together. So there's a lot of different options, and we basically want to be a facilitator. We do maintenance and education for that as well, but our mission is to empower all generations to grow food. It can't be a system where Fleet Farming is, doing all the work. Mm-hmm. We want to be able to empower people and equip them, whatever you want to say, to be able to take it upon themselves to feel confident enough to have these systems of growing food for themselves and generations to come.
100%. I love it. Yeah, that's the biggest thing. It's not just like you know, providing the example of how to do it. It's the educational part that, you know, empowers the person to basically feel, you know, confident enough to even want to teach the next person along the way. And that's how, you know, I think this trend of more self-sufficiency, you know, sustainable living, agrihood. I love that word. That's super exciting to hear. Yeah. I think it's the first time I've heard of that. But I did have a question that just kind of came up. I'm sure you're familiar with permaculture. Do you, with the edible landscaping, is that part of the intentional design? You use some?
Yeah, we have done permaculture designs. We do say that, you know, our local expert is Orlando Permaculture. They're the best people to do that. They're absolutely amazing. But we do fruit orchards pretty often where we'll plant trees and, you know, certain designs together. We'll do some light permaculture design work, but it is a whole integrated system that, you know, experts in permaculture are best to manage those types of things. But yeah, there's definitely smaller ways that people can include them in their yards, including plant guilds. So just like planting plants that just do very well together as a form of companion planting, I guess you could say. That is kind of like a plug and play, you know, like certain like sweet potatoes and bananas and papaya and cassava, they all just lemongrass. Those are all plants that just do very well together. So if you were to go plant them in your community, they would be what's called permanent agriculture or permaculture and more long lasting than an annual crop. Someone who is a really great resource to know what to plant when, maybe more so with the annual crops, is UF Ivis.
Okay.
They have just tons of resources to be able to grow. They have like graphics on every month what to plant. And so when you plant the right plant in the right place at the right season, the right time, if you have some sort of irrigation system where you don't have to you can't mess it up, right? With like drip irrigation on a timer. When you're planting things that are, you know, varieties that do well for our area, those are all tips and tricks that make it easier to grow. I would also say soil amending. So having a regular system of adding like kelp meal or worm castings or any other type of like karanja meal. Other types of soil amendments, which we do educate on our website, fleetfarming.org. When you're doing that, adding mulch for that organic matter, you should feel confident that your growing system is going to do great.
Yeah. And it's only, you know, being patient with the process, but it's quite the moment when you see, yeah, the cherry or the, I just recently had a pepper finally like produce itself. I'm like, oh my gosh, awesome. I'm currently in Mexico, so it's a little bit different. You know, a little bit very similar climate as well. But I do miss the infinite freedom, it seems like, that you have in Florida, because you can plant almost anything like year round.
But yeah, it's so crazy to me. Mm-hmm. Like we really truly can grow throughout the year. You know, we don't have a winter. Some farms close down for the summer. But when you're using cover crops that you can also harvest from, or maybe you're using your sprawlers and your crawlers, like your pumpkins and your watermelons, to cover the soil from the sun during the summer. And then at the end of the summer, you have a big harvest. These are all ways that you can kind of, you know, let it rest, but also to keep the process going of growing food.
Sure. Yeah, I love it. And then, you know, that's staggering, the fact that the David Attenborough, I forget the new documentary that is on Netflix, but, you know, that we only have 60% of topsoil left is just so frightening. You know, by 2050, 2060, you know, what will growing our own food look like? And I think we're on the right track with this agrihood, you know, just starting in our own front and backyards is the best change we can really do if we don't have, again, the resources to have the big land or whatever. So starting small.
Yeah. And some questions that come up with that is like, am I even allowed to grow food on my own land? Sometimes, isn't that a funny concept?
That's crazy.
Some HOAs are more strict where they have their own set of rules. They don't have to make sense. But your your HOAs and your neighborhood associations are usually run by neighbors. You can, of course, join that and get other like-minded neighbors to join that to change the rules. Certain areas, like in Florida, we have an ordinance, I think it's called an urban agriculture ordinance, that allows us to grow up to 60% of our front yard with produce. And so there's things like that that allow you to be able to do that and not have, you know, a big fine, as well as backyards seem to be fair game, especially if you have a fence around it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I would just say if you haven't started yet, but you're feeling inspired to do it, do it. Now's the time. Get started. Kill that lawn. You can either use a tarp with maybe some bricks around it to suffocate it. You can get your friends out there and get a shovel and start to till up that grass. You know, add some compost, add some organic matter, add some soil amendments, form them into rows, and get started. Because there's no such thing as like a bad gardener or, you know, someone who says that they don't have a green thumb. It's just maybe a lack of education, or you just need to have more experiments to be able to grow your first pepper or whatever that is.
So I see that you had some really awesome media recognition. Has that been throughout the years, or kind of,
yes.
Share that experience if you don't mind.
Yeah. So my first summer working with Fleet Farming, we were on NBC Nightly News with Lester Holt. And I was, you know, a lot of our team was on vacation, and I actually had a crop die out like soon before that. So, you know, I was like a newbie in this, and I was like, what do I do? But I called my friend Lee Perry, who ended up joining the team later and being an absolutely amazing leader within Fleet Farming. She was like, you know what, we're going to make this amazing. It's going to be great. Like, this is what agriculture is, right? It's not going to look totally perfect all the time. You know, give yourself more credit than that. So ended up being an awesome opportunity for us. We were also on NPR All Things Considered. We were also on a number of different print resources like Modern Farmer, Smithsonian Magazine, Greenpeace Germany. Like, we were in so many different press from that initial spike, you know, summer of, I believe it was summer of 2015. Yeah. And throughout that, we've been on a number of like local news stations and things like that, honestly, because it's just exciting. It's sure. Exciting to see people come together so much, ride bikes, change a total neighborhood. So like, you can see that any neighborhood could be a Fleet Farming neighborhood. Mm-hmm. Any community group could come together and do this. It's just a matter of, you know, coming together and bringing resources, fundraising for sure, because it's not cheap to, you know, to farm. I would say donate. If you like the concept of Fleet Farming, please donate, because it's a lot, because we don't use a lot of the synthetic chemicals. We don't use any of that. We use all natural soil amendments, fertilizers. So it can be quite expensive, but in the end, it's a product that we like to call, you know, is beyond organic. It's not organic certified because of all of the things that go along with that. But it's, you know, using only natural ingredients and additives to be able to grow a really healthy diversity of produce that nutritionally is harvested right before we sell it or right before we donate it. So it's really amazing the type of system that we have. And I'm just so lucky to be a part of it and to be able to do, you know, conversations just like this, to be able to inspire people that it doesn't take, you know, a degree or anything necessarily to start something like this. It's just your own passion and research.
Sure. No. And that's why, I mean, when I find connections like this, I'm like, I have to basically dig deeper, like, and hear their story of how they found that path or got even involved. And I think it's more or less, you know, I hope and pray that in 5 years, that's like topic of discussion, like, oh, what'd you grow this week? Like, make it almost a normal thing for people to realize, yes, that, okay, one, our food is traveling a lot further than we are now, and it's just not necessary, right? Not at all. Yeah. Especially for people living in Florida, right? That's the perfect example of, we can literally grow the most exotic fruits that people have never tried, never heard of, mm-hmm, course. And it's just, It's almost an underground world that I just want to expose, right?
Yeah. And, you know, I backpacked through Europe a couple years ago, and it really showed me that in a lot of areas, this is not new. Mm-hmm. This is not a new idea. This is just a way of life. And in America, we don't have that really. You know, I think it's starting to trend. It started to trend a couple years ago, but even more so now after COVID, being self-resilient, homesteading, being more natural, growing your own food, you know, planting fruit trees instead of exotic invasives, valuing produce over ornamentals. This whole movement is becoming more and more powerful to our own survival. But it's not the first time people have done this, right? Our ancestors, probably every single one of our ancestors had at least one crop that they were skilled in growing for their own survival. And so I just think that that's fascinating that throughout time, we've lost that. And now we have people in our community, myself included, I didn't really know until I was 20 how to grow anything. And so it's kind of coming back to something that is in all of us, you know, that's in all of our history that we can kind of explore.
Yeah, I love it. No, it's that the regeneration generation, right? It's happening. Yeah. And it's, again, that's why I kind of was guided to create this podcast more or less for like an alternative media outlet for people who, you know, turn off the TV. If you really think the world is falling to, you know, to crap. Yeah, it kind of is. If you look
pick
through
up
that,
a shovel.
Yeah. Then, you know, you're part of the problem, right? But you can be part of the solution. And this is just one example of how we can get back to our roots. So thank you
totally.
For committing to that.
Yeah, I inspire you. Like, I want to inspire you, even if it's just planting one fruit tree for the year, that is creating a legacy in that area for birds, for wildlife, for yourself to be able to, you know, supply some sort of produce to you, or an herb garden. Like, I would just get started. And you know what? Yeah, maybe you might kill something, but it's a start. And, you know, if you've had a garden, like, I encourage you to like expand it or try growing something new or try a different type of perennial plant, like a perennial spinach or, you know, lemongrass or something else to expand on what you're doing or share with a neighbor. I think that people really want to talk to each other and they want to be able to feel connected to other people. So don't forget about that neighbor who's living by themselves and, you know, maybe drop off a plant at their house and start the whole process with another person. So yeah, I hope that you and everybody listening feels inspired to go out there and do something, myself included. You know, I have a very small front yard, very small backyard packed with stuff. But what I haven't done yet is I haven't, you know, potted any of that up and shared it with people, you know, and shared that knowledge. So yeah, there's a lot of work to be done.
Sure. One day at a time, sister. Awesome. Yeah. I like to encourage people to save the avocado seed and then get that rooted. I've successfully got like 6 growing right now in a wow. big potter up here on the rooftop. And oh, it's just so great.
Cool.
And again, I understand that it's like 10 years, yeah, to see production of avocados. So, you know, starting now, I'm even just helping the future. So it's just, again, kind of having that connection of what you're doing today will totally have, you know, an impact on tomorrow, whether that's positive or negative. You know, we're the choice makers. So
totally. Anything is great. Mm-hmm. Anything is great. And it, you know, it'll make you feel good too. I also know that, you know, getting outside in general and getting that vitamin D is really good for our mental health. And so I think that's one thing that, you know, since COVID, everyone's spending more time inside, and getting outside can even be good for you in that sense.
Definitely. Yeah. Just pick a flower and smell it, right?
Yeah.
Little things. Awesome. Well, I think that's it. We hit a lot of really good topics. And again, I'm just super thankful for your time and space and sharing your wisdom and experience with your journey through becoming self-sufficient and resilient.
Thank you. There's always so much to do. And even us, like, we're just like constantly, constantly learning. So if anybody has any suggestions to our program, we're totally open to that.
Definitely. I love it. So where can people go for some more resources If they're in Florida, I know you mentioned the UFIPIS.
UFIPIS is great. Yeah, fleetfarming.org, we have a bunch of different resources. We have things about pest management, soil amending, how to set up drip irrigation, what crops to plant. We have all of that. We also have a YouTube. If you're looking for information like on seasonal gardening in your area, you can look up what zone you are. We are zone 9B, but the zone will tell you what you can plant when. Your local extension agency is helpful. Even looking into like local growers, see what they're growing, and that can give you a good idea. I know that in our area, we have a local horticulturist who wrote his own book on growing specific plant varieties in our area. So that's the resource that we use to find what types of plants are best, because not every tomato can be planted everywhere, for instance. So yeah, there's a lot to research. I also would look up companion planting, knowing what crops just naturally grow well together and what crops don't. That can give you a really good idea of like what to put next to what in the spacing. And YouTube. Mm-hmm. I mean, we are so privileged to live in the age where you could literally Google or YouTube almost anything. And I like Epic Gardening. I love Growing Your Greens with John Colin, I think is his name. Curtis Stowe, the Urban Farmer. Like when I want to get hyped to like go garden, I'll like watch like a YouTube video about tomatoes or something, learn a little bit, and then get out there and garden. So there's so many resources available.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's the best way to learn too. Through other people, because we all do it differently, you know, what works better in Northern Florida, of course, may not be the same in Southern Florida.
Also check us out on YouTube. If you have any questions, you can also email us at info@fleetfarming.org, and we'd be happy to answer any questions that you have.
Perfect. Thank you so much. Great to meet you.
Thanks, Brittany.
Have a
you
good
too.
Day.
Bye. Bye.